Next case is 05-1994, in re Braden James. Mr. Byrd.
Mr. Chief Justice, may it please the court. My name is Jeffrey Byrd. I am co-counsel for appellants Rick and Cynthia Hutchinson. I would like to allocate 5 of my minutes to my other co-counsel, Mr. King, who is trial counsel.
Watch your time there on the clock.
And I believe he wants to use one of those minutes in rebuttal, if he may. Your Honor, I believe this case is primarily about due process, specifically whether the statutorily required change of circumstances standard deprives natural parents previously found unsuitable of due process. First Appellate District found that it did. It found that change of circumstances deprives a natural parent previously found unsuitable of due process because it fails to recognize that parent's paramount right to custody. The problem with this is once a parent is found unsuitable and legal custody is divested from that parent, their right to custody of the child is no longer paramount. This court in Macedo versus Macedo, This court versus Macedo and the Hochstock decision has repeatedly held that once there's an unsuitability or unfitness finding, the focus of the court shifts from the suitability of the parents and the parents' rights to that of the child. Prior to unsuitability, we concede James, in this case, had a paramount right to custody. What that means is they had to be proven to be unfit or unsuitable. The focus was strictly on them. Even if it was in the best interest of the child to be with someone else other than the parents, before finding of unsuitability, that doesn't matter, so long as they're suitable
Counsel,
or fit.
The concern I have with, if we play this case out, anytime a parent is in trouble and wants to give custody to a relative while they go through a difficult time. Under the way that your client wants the holdings to go, it would be virtually impossible for that original parent then to get the child back, because you would always have a child now in a different home, in a stable environment. You could always make the argument it's best interest not to disrupt that child, which is the argument your clients have made. And so you really pretty much have divested the parent of the ability to get the child under the holding of this case and the position your clients have taken. How do we deal with that? Does that mean that you should never take advantage of a parent's offer to help you out because you might lose the child forever under that holding?
No, there's actually a procedure in place where a parent doesn't lose their paramount right to custody and loses custody, and that is through temporary custody. If a parent is in trouble and is temporarily unsuitable, assuming the agency is not involved at that point, they can give temporary custody through the court to a non-parent, at which point, in seeking to regain custody, they haven't had their unsuitability hearing. However, if they do give legal custody, they still have the means to regain custody of the child. But we have to look at the child's interest first, which means we have to look for a change of circumstances.
So all these parents need to be very careful the form that they give up their child temporarily under, because if they don't use the word temporary and they use some different legal form, then they lose that opportunity to get the child back under your test.
Keep in mind, in order to give up legal custody, they have to go through the courts. There's going to be a magistrate or a judge involved. And in a case like this where the agency's involved, they're going to have the right to a court-appointed attorney as well if they're indigent, or to bring their own attorney in.
Okay, so it's under your scenario then, you have an unfit parent, just like in this case, determination, custody changed. The parent has now done everything to straighten their life out. They're doing fine. Under your scenario, that no longer matters, correct?
Under my scenario, once they've had an unsuitability hearing and they've had 1 or 2 years to become suitable through the reunification plan, which is kind of the second bite of the apple, yes, at that point, the only way they can regain custody is through a change of circumstances and the best interest. And I think the legislature has made that clear, that they want, quite frankly, the new custodian to have a permanent relationship in place of the parents at that point.
Even if it deprives the natural parent of regaining custody ever?
Yes.
Okay. I just want to make sure I clearly understood the ramifications, because that's a serious divesting of parental rights, that, and I want to make sure I understand that that's exactly what you're asking for.
It's not really a divesting of parental rights, because they retain residual rights, as this court held in In Re CR.
But under your scenario, almost impossible to exercise.
I think in this case, it may be very possible to exercise years and years from now. When the child grows up and, you know, for say that he becomes able to defend himself, recognize, and quite frankly, maybe if he forms bonds with his siblings through visitation, which was court-ordered, and as visitation would be expanded through the residual rights, there may very well be a change of circumstances in that child's
but
life.
Highly unlikely, because then there's more and more bonding with the custodial parents, and I mean, that's a pretty stretch to say that years and years later they might have a better shot than they do now.
Similarly, the desire of the child may be a factor that is a change of circumstances. If the child grows up and says, listen, I don't get along with my parents, I'm not having a good time, or if the child struggles, that's a change of circumstance. The parents, they're not in any way permanently foreclosed, as appellees argue. The avenue is open, and the avenue is residual rights, but residual rights are not paramount rights, and the legislature has made it clear.
Tell us again, which cases say that when there's a, this was not permanent custody, right, in this
permanent
case?
Custody is never granted to an individual, no. So the right. Hutchinsons weren't capable of having permanent
right.
custody.
So what cases say that once custody changes, the natural parent loses the paramount status?
I think Macedo versus Macedo and Hockstock versus Hockstock. Understanding that
the hot stock was permanent, wasn't it?
No, it was not. It was a situation where there was no unsuitability finding in a private action between grandparent and her name was Miss Gorlene. They applied best interest. And in this court, in this case, the court actually said there was no unsuitability hearing, so the child goes back to the parent unless the parent's found unsuitable.
But in hot stock, we said we specifically said the parent loses paramount right?
You specifically said in Hockstock, once unsuitability has been determined, it never has to be determined again, and the focus of the court will shift from the rights of the child, or I'm sorry, from the rights of the parent to the right of the child. Now, prior to that, it had been, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, but couldn't that imply that the court was thinking best interest of the child?
It very well may have, but the best interest of the child is statutorily defined. Best interest of the child, according to the statute, is change of circumstances and then the factors listed under the best interest.
Well, I think the statute, some places uses a test of best interest and other places says, as you're using here,
in this case,
that you can't change unless there's a change in circumstance.
In this case, the statute specifically says change of circumstances. Both statutes do, actually.
Why cannot change of circumstances refer to the parent situation? They now have cleared up the problems that led to this. They're able to take a child back. Why wouldn't that be an appropriate change of circumstance, to give a child back to the original parents?
Because the legislature, the statute specifically reads a change in the circumstances in the child's life or the life of the custodian of the child.
Why is that not a change in this child's situation for parents to be fit to take them back? Why is that not a change in the child's circumstance?
Because
that's huge.
Well, that's one way of looking. The other way of looking at it is we want to promote stability. If the child is succeeding, is thriving, and is in a stable environment, we don't want to upset that. If the parents, every time they have a change in their life, they could run to court saying, that was enough, that's a change for the child, that's a change for us, that's enough. I mean, every time they took a parental class, every time they took a domestic relations class, every time they got a new job, it would always be enough for them to go back and say, that's enough for us. What the legislature was trying to do, in looking at the legislative history, is we want to promote the stability. If the child's life is stable and he's doing well, we don't want to upset that. And they've, quite frankly, in the statute, say we want this to be a permanent relationship between the custodian and the child. The legislature couldn't have been any more clear.
Justice Stratton's position does obviate the constitutional issue in this case, though, doesn't it?
I'm not sure I understand.
Well, the court, as I understood it,
called the statute unconstitutional because establishing a change in the child's or the current custodian's position was too much of a burden for the natural parent to surmount. Even though it might be in the best interest of the child, they could never get to that step because they couldn't necessarily prove a change in the interest, a change in the circumstances of the child or the current custodian. Here are the grandparents. By saying a change in the parents to the better, the parents are now rehabilitated, and using that as an indication that there has been a change in the circumstances of the child, as Justice Stratton suggests, would obviate the constitutional issue, because in this case, the First District called the statute unconstitutional because it required that initial burden, showing the change in the child or showing the change in the grandparents. And I'm just suggesting to you that that's one way to obviate the constitutional issue that's, I thought, brought us here.
Well, the way I look at the First District opinion is they said that the change of circumstances, not that the burden was too high, but that it failed to recognize, and I think that's their exact language, failed to recognize the paramount right of the parent to care and custody. And the rights to have a paramount right, your right is superior. That would mean the child's best interest would be subordinate at that point to the parent's rights. And it's exactly the opposite. The child's right is superior. And the statute is clear. So if the parent doesn't have a paramount right, if the parent's right after unsuitability and reunification has failed is subordinate to the child's right, how can the parents have a paramount right to begin with? How can that paramount right furthermore violate due process? Does that answer your question? I'm not sure if I addressed your question or not.
Well, I just was suggesting, and I want to take a lot of time here, but if, as Justice Stratton suggests, a redemption on the part of the parents can be considered a change in the circumstances of the child, then we don't have the constitutional issue because we get through the first step. The child has circumstances have changed because of the redemption of his parents. And then we get to the next step, best interests of the child.
I don't think the redemption of circumstances in the parents is a change in the child's life or the child's.
Well, you're rejecting her argument and telling me that does not obviate the constitutional problem or the problem that the First District saw, whether they described it as constitutional or not. And you've answered my question.
Thank you. I would like to give the remaining time to Mr.
King.
Mr. King.
Justice, and may it please the court, to finish up that point, that's exactly right. This paramount right that exists and has been in this court decision for a number of years is forfeited at that point that they lose custody. And the type of custody they've lost is
critical.
What's
the efficacy, then, of the residual rights that are discussed in CR?
I think CR was very clear about describing those residual rights, visitation, right to school documents, things like that, and even said, and the right to petition for custody in accordance with law, and cited 215142 as what they meant, I assume, by in accordance with law. In other words, the words in the statute are clear. What's the intent of the legislature here is that we have just gone from paramount rights of parents, for whatever that reason is that we believe parents raising their own children is more important than what's best in the children's life at that point. That doesn't exist. This court has held that in Macedo, that the focus is shifted to the child, and what the legislature has said is that stability, through the change of circumstance standard, stability is now more important than those parents' rights, even if they have managed to bring themselves now suitable. It's more important to a child that's gone through this custody proceeding to not have to go through it again, that if the placement is working, he's stable, it's a good home, he's doing well in school, that simply some change in the parents, or at that point, because we haven't had the best interest trial, an alleged change in the parents is enough to drag us through custody.
So stability trumps best interest of a child.
After parents have forfeited or lost that paramount.
But think about
right.
that. I mean, that's really what you're saying.
That's exactly what the legislature
stability
is saying.
Stability in a child's life is more important than what a court would determine to be the best interest of a child.
To parents who have lost that paramount right,
no,
that's correct.
We're talking about the best interest of the child.
Custody proceedings themselves, trying to get at best interest, are part of the harm the legislature is trying to get away from here. Whether it be psychological evaluations, court-ordered custody investigations, what goes on in a family during a custody fight, or the financial aspects of it, that in itself, that inquiry, can be harmful. And if there's not some threshold to parents, then you're going to be coming back every time they feel they've done just a little bit better. I'd like to reserve some time for rebuttal on this.
Let me ask you a question before you sit down. Isn't this really a legislative problem? Because 310904E1A says that there'll be no modification unless the court finds a change has occurred in the circumstances of the child's residential parent, and then if they wanted to, they could insert, or the parents. And they did go so far as to say, or either of the parents subject to a shared parenting agreement. But they didn't put the phrase in, a change in the lives of the parents. And wouldn't that be the legislative direction to permit a court to consider a change in the lives of their parents, if that's what the legislature intended?
Which I guess was exactly my point. If that had been their intent, that would have been the time to do it. But they didn't, not in 310904E1A, not in 2151-42B, and well, both places.
That's the Constitution. That's what brought us here. At least that's why I voted for the case, because the First District declared the statute unconstitutional. So that's the issue, isn't it, for us?
And that's our
because
point.
Because it is written the way it's written.
On what basis, if there's a paramount right to custody, that doesn't exist anymore based on this court's own finding in Macedo. So they must be talking about some kind of residual rights, and In Re RC has already said you can come back and enforce those rights pursuant to law inside of 2151-42B, which includes the change of circumstance requirement. So in other words, we're talking about it's not a paramount right anymore as it's been discussed. This is kind of a policy that you should be able to go back with your parents because they fixed themselves, and if anybody's going to make a policy determination.
Well, counsel, in the divorce arena, didn't the legislature change back to best interest of the child?
No, Your Honor. 310904, the statute you're talking about, actually has another hurdle beyond change of circumstance and best interest. Harm outweighs caused by the change. But they still is a change of circumstance requirement, very similar to the 2151-42B language, almost identical. They like to use residential parent instead of custodian in a decree instead of order, but they both have the same
standard.
But
they didn't ease off that requirement that it required a change in circumstance.
I believe in Davis v. Flickinger, this court discussed what equals a change in circumstance and whether that had to be substantial or of substance, but the change of circumstances still applied in both, and nobody's ever talked about throwing it out. And given that paramount right's gone, I think it's the purview of the legislature to decide, is stability more important to society in children who are going to be raised, or is returning them back to a home more important?
Right. And counsel, I want to clarify something that may be confusing. The stability, really, the stability of the children really factors into the best interests when you're looking at the best interest of the child, does it not? They're not two separate things, are they?
Well, not listed as a specific requirement under at least the 310904 best interest factors. I assume the court could use it, but I think the legislature clearly meant it to be a separate thing. It's a threshold. It's not just another factor for the court to consider. It's to say we don't want to keep coming back to court all the time. And I think even American Family Law Journal said that not Law Journal, American Family Law, that it achieves this purpose by making the overall standard for change more stringent. It's not to be another factor. It's meant that unless something changes in the child, and often I don't think it's impossible for children, if the placement isn't that perfect or they've struggled in school or they're having some other difficulty, that change is enough to say, all right, now let's consider these parents who are fixed. But the issue with the legislature is, now that paramount right is gone, I don't think that's any argument. Macedo made it clear that that's gone, that stability is what the legislator wants out of the children. Stability is paramount, not the parents' rights to custody. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. King. Mr. Evans.
Good morning, Chief Justice Moyer, Justices of the Supreme Court. May it please the court. My name is Ross Evans. I'm the attorney of record for Damon and Jamie James. Damon and Jamie are the natural and custodial parents of Braden James, who is now 7 years of age. He's in the second grade. Damon and Jamie have had full custody of their son, Braden, for more than 2 years, and Braden, as well as his full sibling, Xander, are both thriving in their care. The U.S. Supreme Court indicated in Santorski, the fundamental liberty interest of natural parents in the care, custody, and management of their child does not evaporate simply because they have not been model parents or have lost temporary custody of their child to the state. This court made very clear in Hoekstoek, and I read directly from the opinion, since parents have a constitutional custodial rights, any action by the state that affects this parental right, such as granting custody of a child to a non-parent, must be conducted pursuant to procedures that are fundamentally fair. The court went on to say, therefore, our holding in this case does not change the well-established rule codified in 3109.04b1 that after the legal custody determination is made, the best interest of the child standard should be used for any custody modification petitions filed by a natural parent. This court went on to say, a parent should be given only one unsuitability determination, which should come at the time of the legal custody hearing. After such a determination has established or taken away the parent's fundamental custodial rights, the focus must shift from the rights of the parents to the rights of the child. A child's rights are effectuated through the use of the best interest of the child standard for subsequent custodial modification request. And that is exactly the finding of the First District Court of Appeals. Justice Pfeiffer, as you appropriately pointed out, this was not a permanent commitment case. There was never any motion for permanent commitment filed by the agency. In fact, the only two motions filed for the agency after the adjudication of abuse and dependency were motions to terminate the temporary commitment to the state and award legal custody to the grandparents. Interestingly enough, the statute requires that for an individual who's not a parent to be considered for legal custody, they have to file a motion for custody. And if you look at document 5, which is the petition for custody filed by the Hutchinsons, it specifically asks, I'll quote, for temporary legal custody under 2151.23A2, not A1. That is what they requested. That is what they asked for. That is what Damon and Jamie James were on notice of their requesting, temporary legal custody. We get into an issue about what the labels are, permanent versus non-permanent, temporary custody, legal custody, mere legal custody. The reality is there is one type of permanent commitment, and that's a permanent commitment that divests parents of their rights and says, you no longer have rights concerning this child. That permanent commitment can only be granted to an agency or the state. It cannot be granted to a non-parent.
But the chief has really focused, I think, on the question. The statute lists what the factors are to be considered by a court in changing an award of what you're telling us is temporary legal custody. But it doesn't include a determination of whether or not there's been a change in the parents. Could you address that issue?
That is why the statute is unconstitutional. If parents, as this court said recently in In Re CR, maintain residual parental rights, privileges, and responsibilities, they have, if we don't want to call it a fundamental right, let's call it a substantial right to the continued care of their child. And the fact that the court then takes into consideration under the best interest standard whether or not the parents have met that standard to restore custody is the exact standard that should be applied. It's the standard that this court has talked about in numerous cases. A ruling that to apply a change in circumstance, and again, I reiterate that this is parents versus non-parents. This is not a parent versus parent situation where parents both have the same rights, and a parent coming back to try to change custody, it may be appropriate for them to have a higher threshold.
Is there anything in the language of the statute on change of circumstances that prohibits the interpretation that I have suggested, that change of circumstances can also mean change of circumstances in the life of the parents that dramatically would affect a child?
I don't think it does, Your Honor. In fact, I think that this case, the facts, the record is replete with facts concerning changes that occurred that would be considered changes in the child. You know, one of the problems we have...
Well, counsel, if you take that interpretation, then we don't have a constitutional issue. We can just go ahead and interpret it that way and forget about the First District's declaration that this is unconstitutional deprivation.
I am aware of that, Your Honor, and I know that sometimes this court can
rule
one way...
Which would you rather see us do?
I would rather see you rule on the law. I would rather the law finally be settled in this state that if a parent has given legal custody to a non-parent, maintaining their residual rights, privileges, and responsibilities, that the standard to apply when that parent seeks a modification is best interest of the child. Let's keep in mind that the relevant factors, there are 10 relevant factors listed under 3104 F1 concerning what the best interest of the child relate to, as well as any other relevant factor. Certainly, parents restoring themselves to suitability, parents restoring themselves to fitness is a factor in considering the best interest of the child. And as this court, Justice Stratton, in the In Re CR oral argument, asked the assistant county prosecutor, Joseph Young, what the standard would be if Jesse Crowder now came back to seek custody of his children who had, under the exact same circumstances, been placed in the legal custody of the aunt and uncle. And the prosecutor properly responded, best interest of the child. That is the standard that needs to be applied. It lets a judge that's sitting in a juvenile or family law court have the latitude to consider the evidence that's come before them and take everything into consideration, including the strives that parents may have taken to get themselves fit. Justice Stratton, you indicated earlier today, what do we do with parents that make a decision to give custody of their children to someone else while they're in troubled times? That happens constantly. Young parents that have had children that have not yet reached a level of maturity to provide them proper care, don't have the financial ability to provide them proper care, are still in school, or for whatever reason have made decisions to give legal custody to a non-parent, typically a relative.
Let me go back to my question, because I don't think I got an answer. You want a different answer, but I want an answer to my question. Do you see anything in the wording of the statute that prohibits us or would lead us to say that you cannot use the current wording of the statute to find that change of circumstances also applies to a parent?
I think that the two statutes involved, number one, 310904, typically lands more in non-abuse dependency or neglect cases. The statute in abuse dependency and neglect cases is 2151.42B. Those two statutes are not worded alike. There are differences in those statutes. I think the statute as it's currently written is problematic. I think the statute as it's currently written is unconstitutional when related between a parent and a non-parent.
So you don't think we can cure it by finding that it means that? You feel like it doesn't mean that, it's unconstitutional?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Because another version is we can read it to encompass a parent change that affects the child, and then you get to the second test, which is now the best interest, is which you were, where you want us to go.
I think we need to be at best interest, Your Honor. But
you,
I think that
this
is unfortunate.
You think that best interest should come before you look at change of circumstances?
I think that's part of best interest. I think change in circumstances is part of what goes into what's in the best interest of this child, while a judge looks at all of the factors to make a determination as to whether or not restoration of custody is appropriate in a given case.
Are you saying the statute is unconstitutional in whole or just as applied in this case?
We are only saying that this statute is unconstitutional as applied between a parent and a non-parent when the parent's rights have not been fully divested.
Well, it wouldn't be unconstitutional. In response to Justice Stratton's question, there are these words, or either the parent subject to a shared parenting decree, buried in E1A. What do we make of that? The General Assembly obviously decided that with shared parenting agreements, the parents do, their changed circumstances do have some bearing.
Well, and I think that's also why when there's a shared parenting decree, there's another statute that allows a court to terminate a shared parenting decree strictly based on the best interest of a child. A court doesn't have to find a change in circumstance in terminating a shared parenting decree.
But what does it mean in this statute?
I understand. Again, this statute, I think, was written and designed based on parties that were either going through the divorce process or parties that weren't married and were coming to effectuate their rights. We do now know that you can have a shared parenting plan with a non-parent. And we know that the standard when that shared parenting plan is being terminated is, again, a best interest standard, a determination of what's in the best interest of the child. The problem is that I think that this court has said in several of the cases, including Hoekstoke and In Re CR, what the rule of law is. And I think that the statements made in those cases are consistent with what we're asking this court to say in this case, that a best interest standard is more than sufficient. I'm also aware that courts can rule both on the law as well as the facts, and this is a case where there clearly was evidence of changes in this child's circumstances over the course of the litigation. His developmental age was significantly different. He had developed a bonded relationship with his parents. He was seeing his parents on an expanded basis. He had a relationship with a full sibling. The problem is there was never a request for findings of facts and conclusions of law. We simply don't have that from the trial court. From the trial court, we have a general decision awarding custody to my clients. There was never a request for findings of facts and conclusions of law, and this court has said on numerous occasions that a trial court's decision won't be disturbed on appeal if there's competent, credible evidence that supports the decision of the court. There clearly, in this case, was that competent, credible evidence. The First District had previously held the predecessor statute unconstitutional in its Mormon decision. The Mormon decision had been in place since 1979. It was an unreported decision. Unfortunately, it was at a time that we didn't have the same computerization that we have today, where it's easy to find cases and follow cases. Otherwise, I think Mormon might have been cited much more frequently. But they made the same determination in this case that they had previously made in Mormon, which is that it is different when you're dealing with parent versus parent than when you're dealing with parent versus non-parent. We have no dispute that they had that suitability determination at the time of the initial adjudication. We don't dispute that at all. We're willing to go so far as to say that maybe they don't have a fundamental right, but I think they still have a substantial right. And I think before that substantial right is taken away from them, before they're put in a situation where they may never be able to get custody of their child back, even though they have done significant things in their lives to cure their issues, that's a constitutional violation.
Counsel,
that's the issue that needs to be resolved.
Let me summarize what you just said and tell me if that's incorrect. There were no findings of fact at the trial level.
That's correct, Your Honor.
The court awarded custody to your client.
That's correct, Your Honor.
On what basis do we then know that the court did not properly follow the statute?
I think the record is replete with the evidence, and I think a court is allowed to issue a general decision in favor of a party. But I think the record is replete with evidence that's sufficient to support both, if necessary, the change in circumstance as well as the best interest. I don't misunderstand.
So then we wouldn't. We could affirm and not touch the statute at all.
I think you could, Your Honor, but I don't want this court to do that.
Well, I understand what you want.
I think this is an opportunity for this court to make the law clear.
We don't look for statutes to declare unconstitutional, counsel.
I understand, Your Honor. The child's best interest has been the touchstone of Ohio custody law since 1877 in the Clark and Bayer decision. The court indicated in the Cunningham decision that the natural rights of parents are always subject to the ultimate welfare of the child, which is the pole star and continuing privilege of a parent. In this case, the parents proved that it was in Braden's best interest for them to regain custody. Braden has a constitutional right to demand nothing less, and the parents have a constitutional right to be required to prove nothing more. And we ask that this court affirm the First District decision and leave this child in the custody of his parents where he is thriving in their care. Thank you, Your Honors.
Thank you, Mr. Evans. Mr. King, you've gone well over your time, but take 30 seconds.
Counsel, you argue that stability is, or your counsel, I'm not sure which, is very key in the interpretation of the statute. These children are now with the natural parents for 2 years. If we reverse in favor of your clients, what happens to the children?
I believe the only direct choice, and it's a child in this matter, is that you have to reverse the lower court's decision, take custody back to the grandparents, and despite counsel's assertion, there's no evidence anywhere that the children are doing better or that this has worked out in that child's best interest.
Does the court have a hearing to figure that out? Or does the court just take them out of the home, regardless of anything, because we reversed?
We are asking for that order specifically. I think the court then gets jurisdiction back, and if the parents want to file something to say, wait a minute, on an emergency basis, this is how we want to change things, that's their decision and should be done at the trial court level. But they should be held to that change of circumstance standard. And I didn't think that I was just saying stability is the only reason. I said I think that's what the purpose of the statute and why the legislature went there. Even if there's competing policy differences here, that the belief of parents should get their children back someday, they've lost the paramount right, but some people feel they should get them back if they've become suitable. And there's this other policy position of no, stability is more important if this is a good placement and the child's doing well.
Counsel, I think both of you argued that Hockstuck favors the outcome that you want to see. Could you explain that, or did I misunderstand?
Macedo says specifically exactly what we're talking about. They sent the father back down and said, yeah, you were right to be subjected to change of circumstance. You waived your paramount right. Hockstock cited Macedo, did go on then to say, but this parent never got their unsuitability, so you need to go back and do it again. But they finished up almost immediately after that discussing about this shift in focus. And I think that's exactly what the legislature's done, is we need to define how do you focus on just the child, and stability, a change of circumstance test in front of best interest, keeps the child out of these prolonged custody proceedings. If you allowed parents to come back any time they thought it was better, a best interest test is no 10-minute or half a day trial.
I tried to reread that while you were arguing, Hockstuck, and it appears that the chief who wrote that, and I wrote a dissent, and we all seem to be focusing on best interest in that case.
And I think in that case, the lower court in Hockstock had applied change of circumstance. And I think the court was saying, not here. You didn't meet unsuitability, go back and do it best interest only, because if you pass suitability, then you're parent. It didn't address directly the issue in change of circumstance, but in Macedo, the father was subjected to change of circumstance.
And I think in my dissent, I was also arguing that if you had the opposite outcome, you would still be using best interest. So we all seem to be favoring that
case. After change of circumstance, yes. But the legislature's been clear that we don't even want it at a custody trial if the child is still stable. The parents had their rights. And we're not just talking about troubled people who voluntarily turn over the kids. In this case, it's clear. Broken ribs, a bruised little child. Most of these 2150 actions aren't just they need help. They had their year or 2 years of help, county help. Attorneys were present at the time. And 2151.42 says permanent in nature, not permanent custody. That's a different thing to an agency. And what's meant by the legislature is that stability is what matters at this point. Let's not send them back to mom and dad who were troubled once and may well end up troubled again. Let's keep it stable until the child has something come up anyway, and then talk about what's in their best.
Could you comment upon counsel's statement that although there were no findings of fact, the evidence here would, in fact, follow the statute and lead to the same result as was handled?
I think for two reasons, no. The first district dealt with that straight on, and they said no, that there was no finding of change of circumstance, and that's why we're overturning it. It's not required. In the first district, they see Mormon as good law, despite the statute being changed after Mormon, despite the Macedo decision. They feel these paramount rights are around, and you don't apply the change of circumstance test. The judge talked specifically about why she was changing custody within the transcripts of the case. I want this child to go back to his parents, and it wasn't about, here's the reasons why I see a change in the child. It was never even mentioned. And in fact, I think 21 days after father's parenting time wasn't supervised, she announced her intent. Well before the final decision, my intent is to remand custody. So in other words, if paramount rights survive, suitability becomes the test. And that's not what this court says, and it's not what the legislature's made very clear. We're talking unambiguous language in the statute.
You've used your time, Mr. King.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.